The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called... the name escaped me.
Obviously, sharing's always a big issue, for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
It was like a witness league.
A bit of a nice sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here and I'll say, this will do a little bit early.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. Oh, goodness me, what a show we're laying on for you lovely people out there. People are stuffing cheese sandwiches into their pockets to take them out onto the field. Australian squads, South Africa, New Zealand, India, England's coming up. South Africa, Pakistan. Will Pekowski is on the show. Nay, he is in the show.
Yeah.
Will Pekowski is in the show.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, he's in the studio for the show. Wonderful privilege to have the young prodigy sitting here, right here with us in TGC Towers. This is all brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, where you can get free shipping. Use the code CHAMP at budgiesmuggler.com. Hashtag ICDC, a couple of belters coming up. There's so much to talk about. My name's Ian Higgins, Sam Perry. Happy February to you, Pez.
Thanks so much, mate, and to you.
And February... February is when dreams start to die, isn't it, in the Australian cricket cycle and the season.
And that is when TGC rises.
Oh, we thrive.
And not only do your dreams die in February, because summer's coming to a close, mm-hmm. you've missed out on the semis, training is just, it's sparsely populated.
Oh, they are dwindling numbers.
Yeah, dwindling numbers. It's only the teams that are making finals or those who are enjoy cricket that are there, which means about half the clubs there or less. Maybe I'm being generous.
All those goals you wrote down, 500 runs, 30 wickets, they went out the window in late November.
And we'll get into this, but that seems to be filtering through to the professional ranks as well.
People are just on edge, aren't they?
People are on edge, not just in the test team, the BBL as well.
Mm. We saw Mitch Marsh be dismissed by leg side caught behind off Steve O'Keefe. Nice catch by Josh Ryan Philippe. And he wasn't too pleased.
Well.
A big blow up.
Hard not to laugh.
Yeah.
In the sense that Stephen O'Keefe and Josh Ryan Philippe simply just yelled at the umpire.
Yeah. Good appeals get them.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. The umpire obviously made a calculation. Oh, they're paying attention to me. Because umpiring's easy.
That's right.
And then Mitch Marsh, you could see that was a February reaction.
Yeah.
You know, that was bubble stuff.
That's right.
That was also, I have not got anywhere near it and I've been caught down the leg side to the manner of the dismissal. All the ingredients were thrown in there. He had to go straight away. He walked a little bit and then he went again. And it's the second one that indicates
that's right.
It's a long season.
It's like a tsunami. The first wave is often not the biggest. The second wave is. And my goodness me, didn't he give him a real spray? I remember seeing a game. I played a game out at Penrith once, Pez, and their captain was dismissed. And he took his pads off and then he went back out of the dressing room, which was essentially.
So he's off the field.
He's off the field now. He's been dismissed. He said he wasn't
out. So far, so
LBW.
Good.
So far, so good. Not for him, of course. His Saturday and weekend was over. And he went into the dressing room, took off his pads, came back out of the dressing room with one pad and started bashing, bashing the side of the pavilion cum toilet block with his pad, screaming, fully grown man doing that. Yeah. To be fair, he was out.
Cum toilet block and would have worked. But it was, it's kind, was he a father? Because it kind of like
his dogging area, you see.
It's kind of like, I like that he's used his pad though, because he's obviously protecting the pavilion. You're out at Penrith, so he's protecting the home pavilion.
That's
it's almost
right.
Like,
that's right.
Didn't we come across a player who actually had a, what did we call
a
it?
A rage bat.
Yeah. So that he didn't break his own bat.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe every club should have that, some sort of foam material just to smash it with.
Yeah.
There's an episode about that in the early Simpsons as well, isn't there?
Is there?
Yeah, I think you can get it. Oh, God, I'm not going to be able to remember.
What about those, you know, those training aid bats, the fielding bats with the foam on them?
Yeah.
It fucking pings off. Yeah, use that. That's a good rage bat. Yeah. If you've got any rage incidents, do send them in for the Channel 7
as long
show.
As, yeah.
But that's village. As long as they are, you know, not too...
Illegal. Or criminal.
Hey, Pez. Patreon this week, patreon.com/greatcricketer. Ben Cutting, we spoke to Ben Cutting last week. Yeah. It's going to heat up towards the northern summer.
Big boy, thick boy.
Hashtag ICDC Fridays episode 25, the looser, the darker, the TGC raw that people are after.
This week on Ask TGC Fridays, if this titillates at all, he goes, we do discuss, I can reveal this without saying what it is, but we do discuss who we'd prefer to have at a dinner party.
That's right.
Don Bradman or Richie Beno.
Yeah.
And it it goes for a long time.
Too long, some would say.
Some might say too long.
Yeah.
And yeah, as with all these hypotheticals, there's a lot of things, a lot of caveats, a lot of things we need to stipulate. But join us for that discussion and join in at patreon.com/greatcricket.
That comes out on Friday. Now, Pez.
Yep.
Top of the headline, top of the agenda this week, Langer Watch. Now, where to start with this? It started with some rumblings about some player discontent. If I can start with this, Langer then comes out and he says, "You're walking on against India. We're trying to win a test match. And one of our players walks on with a toasted sandwich in his hand. I spoke to the player about it at length yesterday. I said, how do you reckon it looks, mate? Is that not something I should say?" That's how it started. We're thinking, well, good point. It's fucking Village walking on the field with a cheese toasty. The fuck's doing that? Marnus is doing that. That's come out since it has been Marnus, and that was paying $1.10. And then since then, it's just sort of rolled on a little bit more. And
well, that was the report from Andrew Wu and Chris Barrett, colleagues of ours, friends of ours, and that was the anecdote they chose to run with a broader question around how the players are going with Langer.
Yeah.
It was an interesting anecdote to use because I'm not sure that's really the anecdote. It's a fair anecdote to Langer because you read that and you go like, what the fuck is Marnus taking a toasted cheese sandwich onto the field?
Right.
Right? But the broader thing was about like, Langer seems a bit on the nose with the players, a bit of leakage going on, and it kept going.
Exactly right, mate, because when that quote specifically came out, I was like, players are kind of fucking blowing up here.
I see Langer's
point. If I saw that in a third grade game, someone walking on the field with a sandwich in their pocket, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
This is.
It's a test match.
Yeah.
No wonder we lost to the Gabba. Cunt's having a fucking sandwich.
Exactly.
A bat pad.
Yeah. Langer's doing his job, not tickling their stomachs.
And then it's sort of transpired since then. Now, we've been very fortunate. We've just coincidentally bumped into a couple of players the last few days. And fuck, some guys have been pretty keen to talk about the discontent that's been happening in the camp, and fucking Langer's in trouble here.
Mate.
Langer's gone. Like, and it seems now like this is, you know, you're taking one word over another, I suppose, because Langer's been coming out in the media and he's been saying like, well, it's all about coaching and I'm doing a good job and, you know, the environment I can learn, all this sort of stuff. And fuck, it doesn't seem like the players are too keen for that because this seems like it's been going on for years and there's a fucking mutiny happening. And he's in trouble.
You know, we're sort of new to, we're not breaking anything.
I'm not breaking
anything.
We're
not breaking shit.
I am breaking shit. I fucking tell jokes.
But that's
what I do on the internet. All right? I am breaking shit. Langer's gone. He's gone, Nate.
Well, he's a powerful dude.
Oh, look, if I'm dead in the week, like, you'll know where to look.
It's been extraordinary to hear some of the things that players have been saying off record. Mm. And while people often leak to the media, it's usually a player or two. It's usually a maverick maybe. But this has all the hallmarks of a combined effort.
Mm.
And in relation to this thing with Langer, where the PR war is on in fucking earnest, it reminds me of like our old head of corporate affairs at Telstra in his office. He had this was communications. He had a big like print and it said, "Loose lips sink ships."
Okay.
And like the concerning element to this with Langer versus the players is not necessarily what's being said yet.
Yeah.
It's who is saying it and the way it's playing out.
Yeah.
So like there was leakages about Langer first up in Wu and Barrett's article.
Yeah.
There was a follow-up article from Wu where players had leaked that Langer had got onto WhatsApp and said, "Don't leak."
Yeah.
So they've leaked on a leak.
Yeah. Fuck a leaky ship.
And a few days on, not one player has come out privately or publicly to defend Langer. Mm. It has all the hallmarks of it being a coordinated effort. Mm. And some of the stories that are emerging and some of the views of players are astonishing in their contempt. And it goes back a long way. And my question is, how does it reconcile? Because in response to all these leakages, Langer has gone onto Media Street now. Mm. He's given a lot of interviews. Mm. And while there's a lot of airy notes out there about him being willing to adapt and change, the large majority of it, when you sift through it, is that He's a good coach, and he has his way of doing things. And so they're on a warpath, these guys, and it's extraordinary.
I've got no interest, by the way, in like anyone losing their job, let alone the coach of the Australian cricket team. I don't fucking know Justin Langer. He doesn't know me.
He knows you a little bit.
He's been looking at my stats.
Yeah,
I might get a game with all these fucking tours that are happening at the same time. First of all, I got no interest in anyone that in any level of that. But like when you start piecing a few things together, because this for me, I don't know about you, mate, but I had absolutely no idea about any of this. And he's been coached the Australian team now since Sandpaper, which is what I want to say 3 years ago. Is that right? And like, so I had no idea out of this. But then within the space of a week from this article that you're talking about, that you referenced from Sydney Morning Herald, then all of a sudden it's like, now I'm piecing a few things together. The players are fucking, they're just off him. And then you start thinking about like his style of management, and I use management deliberately because for me, he's like, it reminds me so much of like a football manager where like he is, who the fuck knows who a cricket coach is ever? Langer's like almost the most famous person in that team because he comes out all the time and he speaks about, he's always doing press conferences. Like Trevor Bayliss won the World Cup with England, right? How often did you ever hear from Trevor Bayliss? Almost never, you know? And so it just reminds me of this style of coaching / management where he's actually a football manager, where it's all about like tacticians and it's like, it's all about JL.
Crisis at the club. Mourinho has lost the dressing room.
Yeah.
The players won't play for him anymore. You know, the manager is out of touch. Player power is out of control. The players are briefing the media, The manager is subtweeting. Like it's yes. And how do managerial crises end in the EPL?
Always end well, mate. What's going to happen next is the ball's going to come out. He's got full backing. Then he loses. He gets a tough one more draw at West Brom away, and then he's gone. That's what happens. So when Australia go to West Brom, they go to the Hawthorns next week. But mate,
Africa is the Hawthorns.
This ends by him losing his job, which I take no pleasure in saying because the guy's fucking employed by Cricket Australia and that's a great job to have and stuff. But like, this doesn't end in him. He's been the coach of this team for this amount of time. It appears anyway from what players are saying, which again might be inaccurate, but it seems what they're saying is this has been going on for ages and it's now just spilling out and there's a fucking cascading effect of this, like all these stories of discontent that like we have no right in hearing. We're just fucking. Players are keen to chat for some reason. And so this doesn't end in him like learning and changing and then they get a good result in South Africa, I don't think. And then it's like, that's all good. We forgive you. The camp's not happy. That Australian camp is not happy. And it makes sense because they never felt something was not quite right this summer. You know, I just felt like there's nothing, something quite there. And it makes sense with compounded with like, you know, hotel quarantine shifting around, huge series against India. They're losing the stress, this intensity of this coach that apparently the team fucking hates. All these little jigsaw piece puzzles are sort of coming together.
Yeah. I think that, when you say he's gone, that's the only thing I would temper because I don't think historically Cricket Australia has had, or any great shakes in pivoting decisively and quickly when something is quite clearly wrong because something's been quite clearly wrong with Justin Langer for a long time if you believe the players and nothing really seems to have happened. I mean, he lives and dies by results. The South Africa series will be the most kind of meaningful thing in relation to what happens next. And that's why I firmly believe that we will see a collapse and Faf lifting a trophy with his shirt off. and it will be bookended. Sandpaper will bookend.
I don't know if you've seen this, Pez, but the trophy this year for the Australia-South Africa series is actually just a towel.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, we know who will win that. But,
not Sheridan number.
What worries me, and I'll say it like as someone who follows Australian cricket, is that this may actually, because of the political animals involved in it at the highest level, like this will be a slow car crash.
Yeah.
You know, because the stories that we're hearing are that like it is untenably toxic in the side.
Yeah.
But because of issues around probably around contracts and careerism and people wanting to keep their jobs and all those things that are probably understandable, no one's going to step aside, you know? Mm. And so we're going to be, as sort of fans or followers, consigned to just watching this, degenerate slowly. And that's what I don't want to see.
That's the worst case scenario.
I'd rather, we might wake up in a couple of days and they've smoked the peace pipe. Now, judging from what, maybe, and everything's fine, so you got to be careful. Yeah. But, like, judging from the way people are talking, it's gone.
It's gone.
It's a relationship that is gone.
Yeah.
Trust is gone. Mm. And the mutiny is on.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking like from an English perspective, what they would want is for him to stay for the Ashes, because like it seems to me that the players are desperately unhappy, desperately so. And you know, again, back to the football analogy, where like we all know that the manager's getting sacked. You know, we all know it's coming. They got to fucking piece some puzzles together. Who's available? You know, is Thomas Tuchel available?
Yeah.
You know,
like, who's Tuchel here?
Yeah.
Gillespie.
Gillespie, yeah.
Success at PSG.
And
but couldn't do the game. Couldn't do the job.
Who's Neymar? Yeah. Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah. Alex Strikers is PSG.
You know, we all know where this is going. And how long do we have to wait for the change to happen? Now, Langer's still got 12 months left on his contract, which will be after the Ashes. So, but like
18, yeah.
So, is the team going to go all the way?
Well, he came out yesterday and said he wants to go through to India 2022. He sees that as the Everest. So, he's already stamped his foot down and said, I want to stay beyond my contract. And what's interesting about this is, harking back to your point earlier around the position of a coach in a side. Now, like, I always thought like John Buchanan gave great guardrails to that Aussie side that were excellent and challenged them. Of course, he had Mavericks like Warne who didn't appreciate it at all.
Right.
When I hear Langer speak and the sort of advice that he likes to push out there and whatnot, and you know, he's entitled to do his coaching however he likes, and he's an expert coach in terms of how long he's been around and stuff. But it sounds a lot more like a footy coach where the team is kind of built around the manager and built around the coach.
Mm, yeah,
and that in fact the coaching industry, or at least as it's led by him, wants to raise itself to that position where the coach becomes a critical part of the side. And it's just the nature of cricket doesn't lend itself to that. You know, a footy coach creates systems and pre-planned lines. It shows you where to run. It creates tactics before the game that you sort of ingest and you execute.
Yeah.
Cricketers have to think on the run. You know, Payne is there. Payne decides who's bowling. Payne decides where the fielders are. Payne has to manage a player being taken off bowling if he's not happy. You know, the captain has a much bigger role in that. And so I don't, you know, I think Australian cricket is getting to a point where Langer is sort of positioning himself as almost as important, if not more, you know, than the team. Yeah.
And you sort of understand this more when, like, you get the outside perspective of how a lot of people from the UK consumed the test, where, like, oh, Langer's David Brent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, because it just sounds like he's the rock star of the team. He's the focal point.
Mm.
And I wonder,
do you know England's cricket coach now?
Chris Silverwood.
Yeah.
I looked it up.
Love to do
yesterday.
A pop. Yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah. I've just Googled it. Yeah.
I read it literally yesterday because I was doing a thing for India or England. And that's the first time I knew that, yeah. And I know Mickey Arthur's a Sri Lankan coach because he's obviously used to do Australia.
Anyway, the thing is, this is a convenient conversation because players are talking so – and Langer said this yesterday, oh, it's my turn to get whacked with the stick and stuff, and we may actually be in that phase and they come out and it's all – good. The problem is, like, the fundamental problem is that it seems as though the players have decided and have felt for a long time that they don't really want to work with him.
Mm.
And the question is, how will that reconcile? How does that reconcile? Does Langer have the personality to change? He's certainly suggesting he can adapt in the press.
Mm.
He often follows it up with comments that suggest otherwise.
Mm.
To my mind, you know, it just seems to be a slow car crash. They're on the warpath. I don't know where it goes.
It's so funny, man. Just in preparation for this show, just like just kind of reading it from outside perspective. And I was like, nah, I reckon, and this remains true. I think Langer's done a great job to this point.
Yeah.
I think like from where he picked it up with South Africa and sandpaper, and I think he's like taken it to this point, maybe through some gritted teeth with the players from halftime. But I was sort of going into this being like, you know, I kind of worry about like the leadership and the team, and you know, if Marnus has taken, you know, sandwiches onto the field, that fucking is village. It's naive and it's young and it's dumb.
But everyone, we even heard just recently, it didn't quite happen like that
Like that.
So the way that story's being presented
literally bumped into a player on the street outside my apartment and just got to talking, and I was like, oh fuck, this is way worse than what I thought. This is fucking way worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's where I'm coming from anyway with it. But
who knows?
Who the fuck knows what's going to happen? I don't know.
The South Africa and New Zealand squad split will be interesting because, like, there's suggestions that sort of, you know, while Langer is the tough old school guy who makes you run hundreds and doesn't tickle your stomach and, you know, Australian flag draping and all that kind of gear, be tougher. why'd you fucking review that, Finchie? The test.
Yeah.
Then you've got the, and he probably won't appreciate us suggesting this, but the softer, more personable touch of Andrew McDonald, who seems to be respected by a lot of the players for his ability to be approachable, and chat with them. Yeah. And, half the team are going over with him to New Zealand.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the two squads that have come in for the South Africa series. I've got some thoughts on fucking South Africa. I watched that. they got beaten by Pakistan in the first test there in Karachi, but we'll come into that a bit later. The two squads, Matt Wade's gone. It's probably the biggest one. Matt Wade's gone from the test side, and Alex Carey comes in as a substitute keeper. And also just a little knock on the door for Payne there, I reckon,
probably.
As well.
That's okay.
Marcus Decherty's in the squad.
Okay.
Partridge shrug. Okay. Good for him.
Yeah.
Well, old Mark. That's probably... mate, it's so harsh.
Yeah.
It's so harsh. What am I supposed to do here?
Mm.
That's probably the end of Matt Wade's test career. I think you actually forecast that last week. Why would they bother?
I don't think it's Nostradamus. I don't know how he's responded to it.
He's vice captain of the New Zealand squad.
He's an excellent white ball player.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think about the New Zealand squad, I think it's a great opportunity to... try some new guys. Like, we'd all love to see Josh Ryan Philippe, at the top of the order. Tanvir Sangas. I mean, Jai Richardson, I think he wasn't on the South Africa tour because he's underdone in terms of coming back from his injury. It's just 20 overs a day is different to four overs a day, four overs a game. So, that's good. What else? Lawler reported yesterday that Moses might be in at number five for the Aussie side. Ahead of Travis Head. He's waited his chance. So that I like that because it's new and he's a smart person and he's thick.
And he's
34 yesterday.
34. And captain New South Wales, a bit more leadership in the team.
And the other one that was reported by Lawler yesterday as well is Ben Horn, I think, is that Usman Khawaja's on standby. He's a reserve bat for South Africa, which symbolically is interesting too.
Mm. You haven't seen much of Usman since he challenged Justin in the test.
Yeah. Well, no. Langer said yesterday in his interview he loves and respects Usman and it goes both ways. But I watched the test and Usman challenged him, and as it was suggested to us, the next scene should have been R.I.P. Usman. He was never seen again. So I don't know. I don't know, man.
Hey, it looks like Josh Ryan Philippe is going to debut for Australia in New Zealand, unless Wade keeps.
Hey, I think he's special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he needs a shield gig.
And he should go to New South Wales.
He should go to New South Wales, yeah.
That's where Pete Neville is currently doing the job. But he's towards the end of his career, you'd think. Philippe is fucking raw talent.
He's special. I think
he's probably going to play as a bat. I don't think he's a long-term keeper.
Yeah, but it seems to be the trend with a lot of keepers these days as well anyway. It's almost rarer to be a keeper first, bat second.
Mate, what about in England? They got like nine keepers.
100%.
Ben Foulkes is back into the England squad. He's probably going to play because Butler's going after the first test.
They're kind of like, I'll just absorb it.
Mate, isn't it funny? Remember how like Warne was like the fucking, he's going to create a generation of leg spinners here. Gilchrist has done that with wicket keepers, but Warne was just a freak because leg spin's really hard.
Warne's virtuoso. Don't understand it.
Yeah. Mate, let's get into the BBL. There's just two games of cricket left in the BBL. One's on Thursday night, the Scorchies.
Yeah, of all the great cricket that's happened in the last couple of days, a little bit more context, better players involved, back at the SCG. Let's talk about AJ Tye.
let's talk about shithousery.
Let's talk about shithousery in the BBL.
Yeah.
Well...
So for those who didn't see it, Pez, what happened?
What happened was that the Sixers were playing the Scorchers. They were playing off to play in the final. It was 1v2, and the Sixers absolutely demolished the Scorchers as they were on their way to strike the winning runs. I think only one down or two down, something like that. James Vince, who was on 98 not out, was at the striker's end after Dan Hughes was trying to kind of, nurse him to his 100. Yeah,
locked out three balls.
Yeah, something like that. It was about 20 balls to go. AJ Tye comes in to bowl. He needs two for his 100 and one to win. So he needs to hit a boundary per the rules. And so what does AJ Tye do? He bowls a ball that, according to James Vince, landed at AJ Tye's shoe. Bounced about 3 metres over Vince's head and then took another bounce before Josh Inglis took it, thereby denying James Vince's century because it was a wide.
Yes.
Now, here goes.
Yes.
there seemed to have been a discussion afterwards about whether or not AJ Ty meant this. Now, fuck me. He could not have meant that more than anything else in the world. Come on. I mean, give him some respect.
Yeah.
Like, the ball bounce for England. I weep for those who authentically suggest that he just happened to make a mistake at that point in time. I laugh with those who inauthentically suggest it. I mean,
Vince said, I hope he didn't mean it.
Vince's eyes were fucking...
It's the hope that kills you, James.
Fucking fantastic. There's a close-up of on Channel 7 of AJ Ty immediately apologising. Now, the universal body language for that is holding both hands up.
Yes, two palms.
But if you look a little closer, you can also see his mouth as he apologises, which has ever so slight smirk
sports
as
smile.
He does it. And yeah, you know, my wife says this to me. She's like, I'll say something. She goes, yeah, but I can see your mouth. And it's like, what's really doing the communicating?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
His hands are his mouth. Yeah. I choose mouth there. And good on him. It's just the BBL.
Yeah, I didn't realize BBL 100 meant so much to an international and test player. I mean, fuck, we had a few DMs. Is AJ Ty the shittest bloke in the entire world? Yeah. Fucking hell! I haven't even watched the competition, to be honest. Looking forward to tennis.
Friend, that's the feeling. You're losing. You're red faced. You hate everyone and everything. You know, if you can't have success, at least deny it to somebody else.
At least deny it. You're right.
Yeah.
Well bowled.
He should have just pitched that.
The Sixers are in the final, obviously. Dan Christian said he wants Australian reselection. Fucking fair play.
Where did he say that?
ESPN Crick Info.
Oh, okay. Hold on, what's that? yeah. He's not one of the guys.
He's texting me.
Well, I thought it was interesting that, like, they announced the, like, BBL Team of the Year and also the Aussie, like, T20 side to go over there. Yeah. And, like, there was one Sixers player. Yeah. Philippe. And it's like, a few other blokes I reckon should be amongst it. And I they should take Dan Christian over, I reckon.
It's really funny, man, picking like, there's horses for courses, and there's also just like the sort of future selection, you know. Mm. And I wonder how much once you elevate to international cricket, I wonder how much that is given weight over, say, for instance, Dan Christian is now a specialist T20 player, right? He just goes around the world and he just fucking seems to win every single T20 tournament, and he contributes massive ways in every single one that I've actually watched him in the last few years. But I wonder what they want to do is
he bowls round the wicket, round Yorkers into the shoes of right-handers.
Yeah, that was pretty hard to face. But I wonder how much they actually put more weight in giving like a 23-year-old an opportunity. I've got no names here about who they might be, but like they pick someone younger because they want to give them international exposure.
Mm.
So then they get picked in the ODI setup and then maybe test match selection if they're in that realm as well. I wonder how much they put more weight into that, because if you're going to pick your best T20 team in the world, I reckon Dan Christian's pretty close.
Maybe Christian just said something wrong to Langer once.
The Thunder are out after the Heat beat them. Now the Heat play the Scorchies in the final spot.
I could love saying the Scorchies.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to say. Anything else on that, Pez?
Well... you have to hand it to the Brisbane Heat, who we've fucking been flogging for about 3 years.
Yeah, well.
With respect to them. I've always been behind the Bash Brothers. Get out there, give it a whack. Well, they've been doing that. Marnus is there. Marnus is a bit of an X-Factor for them. Not the X-Factor player, not to confuse that with the new rule. Mm. So, you know, they got
not their... confused with the X that you get on sometimes on a toasted sandwich when you put it into the presser.
Well, indeed.
Some people might get confused about that.
You know, what? I don't really know. I mean... everyone was like giving it to Sam Hazlitt as he and Marnus were trying to negotiate the run chase against the Thunder.
Mm.
They sort of only needed 150 or something. They let it get up to like 10 and over, 11 and over. Hazlitt could not hit one off the square. It was sort of like 15 off 22 or something like that. And, you know, and there was a lot of tweets as I was policing that. And normal, you know, cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended with like 70 off 40 and got him through. Yeah.
He won the game. All right, Pez, a couple of test match series going on around the world. Now, India-England is one of the biggest ones this year, although they play each other 9 times this year. The first test is in Chennai, and the second test is also in Chennai. The first test starts on Friday, 5th of Feb, and the second test the week after that. Now, Graham Swan, Pez, not sure if you caught this, Graham Swan said that this series, India v England, is bigger than the Ashes. It's not, though, is it? It's not bigger than the Ashes. The Ashes is the biggest series in cricket. For as long as Pakistan and India don't play each other because of, you know, political stuff.
Yeah.
It's a big series.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
I heard people suggest that Australia and India were developing into a rivalry to match the Ashes, you know, from a cricketing perspective.
I wouldn't mind winning one of those, though, so, to be honest.
That's right. What it suggests is that both countries are cucking themselves for India.
Well,
rightly so. And that's a very, very, that's the number one strategy for both businesses, as it should be.
Yeah.
How do we cuck ourselves?
Well, for as long as India's dick remains the biggest in world cricket, we will be.
And it will for 300 years at least. Right? Hello to our new YouTube subscribers. Your country has a bigger dick than ours.
Now, Pez, I want to go through a couple of scores because obviously no cricket yet. But England are really fascinating because they've got fucking 30. They've got 30 players fucking dropping in and out of sides. Rory Burns comes back in. So that'll sort of at the top of the order for them because they had Zach Crawley and Dom Sibley opening the batting in Sri Lanka. That was the whole issue with the spin. That's when Peterson delved into his private letter collection where Rahul Dravid said, well, this is how you play spin, according to one of the greats. Yeah.
Champ.
Stokes and Archer are back.
Yeah, love that.
So where I said before, Ben Foulkes is probably going to keep for part of this series, I mean, because Josh Butler and his brother Joss is going to fly home after the first test. Ollie Pope. There's some prodigal runs right there. He's actually in Sri Lanka at the moment.
Okay.
Because remember how he had surgery after the West Indies series? Well, they're playing in England.
Oh, vividly.
Yeah. Bairstow, Wood, Curran, all rested for the first two tests. How excited are you about England, the England cricket team?
Well, I'm afraid, actually, to be honest.
England have more depth than what I realised.
Yeah.
England are pretty good.
I'm afraid that we've just been, and it is we, it's the public's team.
That's right. We've been pantsed
in squad by India at home. And why do I sort of feel like India won't give a fuck about this series? I know why. It's because I'm insecure and only see cricket through an Australian paradigm and am generally pessimistic about things. So I'm already positioning it as like if England knocks over India at home, like, oh, well, India, you know.
Mate, if I get close, I'm worried. I just there's something in the air here.
Can we be honest about what we're worried about? Just general.
What are my actual fears?
Just Twitter, basically. Just England cricket Twitter, basically.
Yeah, I guess so. Mate, I'm just looking at like England's team. What will it? It would be Burns, Sibley opening, Zach Crawley 3, Root 4, 5 will be Stokes, I think. Stokes, or about 6. Haven't figured out who 5 is.
Well, Dan Lawrence was batting 5 for them.
Dan Lawrence,
in Sri Lanka.
And Dick Weller said he's one of the best players the spin he's seen. He wanted tips from him.
Righto.
And Dick Weller had a bit going on that series. And the bowling. The bowling involving Archer. Anything with Archer's good. Anderson, Broad.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Curran, it'll just be fucking Wood. Yeah, well, they'll all just rotate, but it'll be Leach and Best show.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You think when England
Jack Leach has improved. I was watching the England Sri Lanka stuff. His action and the work he gets on the ball is, I don't know if he's what's that fucking John? I'm the spin whisperer.
It just reminds me, just because I agree. He actually did well. There's reports in that Sri Lanka series. Obviously, wasn't watching ball by ball.
Oh, but yes, you were.
But Dom Bess and Jack Leach, they bowled really well in parts, then bowled horrendously in other parts, and bowled well again, and then like. They both got 4 wickets in the second innings of the Sri Lankan series, the second test match. And then someone on Twitter wrote, like, they've been bowling really well, good signs for England spinners. And then Mark Waugh commented, fucking never see Mark Waugh pop up.
I can't wait to hear this.
And he's like, race 7, get a number. He was like, yeah, well, spin-friendly wickets are easy, but the real challenge will be if they can bowl on flat pitches. It's like, can never do well, can they?
Well, can anybody do well with June?
Yeah.
June.
Choose your feet.
Yeah. Just get down it on the full.
Now, Pez, we talk about fears, unless you want to talk about England.
I just note that Channel 4 might be broadcasting it.
Really?
There. Yeah, there's some chat. As we go to where Jonathan Liu did a piece on it, there's some conversation. It may well actually just, may well not have, they might just take an Indian feed, but that it might be back on Channel 4, which is cricket back on free to air in the UK. Fuck yeah. And it's kind of like, we're going to get into Pakistan and South Africa.
Yeah.
Just a few, I mean, cricket back on free to air in England is good for cricket. Mm. Australia getting dicked by anybody at home is good for cricket. You know, people wind up around that. That's good, I guess. I don't understand it, but I'm told
Australia's,
it's good.
Australia's bringing I've just cricket been learned, together.
Yeah, I've been told to say that. I don't feel it, but I understand rationally that it is.
You haven't blinked in 3 minutes.
Yeah. You know, South Africa play Pakistan in Pakistan. Just looking at the like the actual shot of it, like it was hazy.
Oh, hazy!
It was hazy, and it brought brought back memories, Salim Malik stuff and whatever. But who cares? It was it was hazy. The sound of the bat off the ball was very Pakistan.
Yeah,
cricket on Channel 4. I just, you know, there's
looked
some
fucking
some,
hot.
Some good things happening in cricket globally speaking. You know, Faf's about to lift the towel against Australia. There's just a lot. There's a bit going on global cricket.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Fucking hell, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of cricket as well. Now, Pez, you're talking about England. Yeah. You're talking about England before about how we're scared. Then I was going through the Indian team and they're like, oh, no, this is the team that will dominate for the next 100 years.
Yes. As it's the 100 years war. 100 years of humiliation for Australia. It's like China.
It's the commencement of the Asian century, 2020. Mm. Mark it down. India squad. Kohli's obviously back in to captain.
Of course.
Rahane.
I love how quickly they announced that after the historic Indian win under Rahane's captaincy. Mm. Like, it was the next day. Series against England, Virat Kohli captain. Let's move on.
You know what?
Next. That's how you fucking do stuff quickly.
Do you know what Rahane should have done? He should have fucking cut that cake. And then he starts to get a few more votes in the dressing room for who's going to captain, you know?
But Rahane's brand is peace.
Yeah.
He's the peace lover. He's quiet. Yeah. He's the dad dick beard. And he's like, I'm zen. I got it.
He sits in the corner of the dressing room, legs spread. His kids fucking everywhere. This is my dressing room, secretly. He's mafioso stuff.
I couldn't, I didn't get any
sleep
last night.
Rahane's in the mafia.
Well, he may well be. And I just, but the peace he exudes is actually something worth noting. Like, you know, my 5-month-old son has now decided he doesn't sleep anymore.
Sure.
So he came in, wife brought him at 1:30 a.m. This morning. So I haven't had any sleep. And just to get some peace, I actually just put on the last 10 overs of Australia India and just focused on when they locked in on Ajinkya Rahane.
Yeah, watching
that because he was
zen.
He was zen.
Yeah.
And that actually made me feel zen.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Okay, so now, last time England played 5 tests against India, Kohli averaged 109. So that's pretty good. Ishant Sharma's back. Apparently Ishant Sharma was fit back in November after his IPL injury, right? But the selectors wanted him fully fit for this England series. So Sharma's back in. Hardik Pandya. Remember him from the fucking T20s in Australia?
Just
single-handedly won games. The rock star, fucking tattoos on his neck.
Yeah.
It's fucking sick.
Yeah, it's really good.
So he's in the 18-man squad, but he's going to play as a specialist bat, apparently. They've got Bumrah, Siraj, and Takura are all in for bowlers.
Yep.
Ashwin and Yadav for the spinners. Jadeja's probably going to play the second test. Yeah. This team's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
England ain't winning shit.
So are you thinking it's going to be like just India have a stick, bat first, 630, oh, Kohli 230 not out, like... And
mate,
spin
6:30 at lunch.
Yeah.
Mate, remember watching Shubman Gill and the Gabba just like back foot drive Hazelwood from a length? What do you reckon that's going to be like in India when it doesn't seam or bounce?
You always forget when like...
I do forget quickly.
No, like if the way cricket's played in India, I mean, my memory is of it's like you go and check some highlights of Australian cricket over in India and it'll be like the worldies of McGrath and Warne bowling and it'll have a similar-ish haze to what we were discussing earlier.
Yeah.
And the crowd like going ballistic for every single hit. And it'll be like Tendulkar will be on 130 not out. Ganguly's on 80.
Numbers.
And like India's two for 320.
Yeah.
And McGrath's just toiling away. Mm. Like, is that what we can, because that's what happened then, is that what's going to happen now?
Yes.
Because everything happened then is what?
When you're, I'm reminded of that 2001 game in particular when Dravid and Laxman batted and they got 8 million runs or whatever that partnership was.
I remember that.
The beginning of that test match, the fucking arrogance of Australia. Steve Waugh's got 6 slips and a gully when McGrath's bowling in India.
They got those feeler shirts, remember? Feeler.
They're
starting to fuck around when they start to be sponsored by
around,
Feeler. They had little fucking colours on their collars as well. It's like, what are you doing, boys? Yeah. That was like... But even when they were playing in that series, it was like Australia were so impregnable.
Yeah.
I mean, we will go anywhere.
We'll go anywhere.
Anyone. And
play the exact same way.
You know, Gillespie's bowling heat. The ball's not getting above a shin. We'll be fine.
We'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Laxman innings is probably the best innings I've ever seen, to be honest. That was the first time. At the time when I watched, I was like, I've never seen a better innings than that.
Mm. Jack Leach is one not out pretty good
as well.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, well, they were referencing Chris Rogers that next month.
Hey, Pakistan and South Africa.
Yeah.
Really good test match this one, Pez. In Karachi for the first time. That's good. Cricket back in Pakistan, good.
Really good.
Here's another good thing.
Really good.
Aleem Dar wearing big fuck off aviators umpiring.
Yes.
How the, isn't that throwing hard enough? He's wearing aviators.
Yeah.
He's looking fucking sick. Forward alarm, 109, batting like a lunatic, batting like 3 foot outside leg, body facing right down the wicket. Yeah.
Wouldn't play fours.
Wouldn't play fours here. Came in at 4 for 27. Now, here's the thing about South Africa. They were winning that game a couple of times.
Yeah, so Pakistan have won and comfortably so. But
seven wickets.
But you watched it ball by ball. So tell
I watched
us
it ball by ball. Yeah. Pakistan were in trouble at 4 for 27. South Africa batted first, got 220. Pakistan 4 for 27. Five alarm comes in and gets 100. Then they get a lead of like 120. Pakistan's number 9 comes in and gets 60 or something. I forget who that was. South Africa got it back in the third innings to parity, one down, and then lost 9 for 70. So then they only had a lead of 90. Pakistan chased it 3 down. But, mate, I'm looking at the South African team. Dean Elgar, probably the premier opening batsman in the world at the moment. Opens batting with Markram. Great record against Australia a couple of years ago. Back when we were cheating. Van der Dusen batting 3. Faf 4. They got Rabada, who just went past 200 wickets in this test game. They got Norkier. Now, Norkier is interesting because he was bowling. He had spells in this game where he was bowling like 135, 136. His first spell was fucking quick. It was like 148 in Pakistan. That's going to be going through the chest in Joburg. Don't you worry about that. I'm scared about South Africa. Australia's falling apart. They don't want to play. For the coach anymore. They're going to down tools.
Mate.
Is the Australian cricket team going to down tools for West Brom away?
Title of this show.
Fuck, it's a long one. Now, Pez, we were very fortunate.
Just looking at the highlight. Just on Pakistan, South Africa, because I did watch the highlights, and one thing I noted was like, it's only a very, very small thing, and it's just a comment on cricket. Mm-hmm. Like, when you look at cut-down highlights, your little minis, if you will, not KO minis, it's just a Pakistan cricket YouTube has done it, 15 minutes or something like that. Every day, it gets 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And, like, you only then get the boundaries or the wickets, really. And so you're trying to keep your eye on how the scores changed in between each thing.
Yeah,
and, like, at one point, Faf du Plessis comes in the first innings. So there was a wicket, Faf du Plessis is in. The next highlight is Faf du Plessis on 23 of 46 deliveries, getting out. And I'm like, and you're just watching the highlights of the deck, oh, that's it. It's like, just facing 46 balls in cricket, scoring 23 runs in a test match, day one against Pakistan, is probably 90 minutes of work for him.
Yeah.
Like a whole fucking football match's worth of work. What sort of contribution does it make to the highlights on one day? Here's how he got out. You can toil in cricket for 90 minutes facing worldies on their home decks and play with skill to survive for 90 minutes and not have made any tangible contribution to the game, really. It's like, there's 20 odd, you failed.
Low shot there.
Yeah, gone. It's just fucked, really.
Mate, one game, you can toil through a whole career. You can lose your 20s to this game. What for?
One mistake from an umpire sometimes.
Often.
Often from an umpire.
Alim Dar with his big fuck off aviators.
Exactly. Yeah, oh, they're yelling at me. That's out.
Yeah. Is it lunch? Yeah, go on then. All right, Pez. Now, we were very fortunate to speak to Will Bukowski. And this interview is from a week ago. We organized
this interview is from before.
We knew anything.
Off.
We knew anything. Yeah. So we don't ask him about Langer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Anyway, as ever, all this summer's interviews are brought to you by Ponting Wines.
Where it's been suggested to us that we should look closely at some of the marketing collateral in relation to Ponting Wines, in particular the pants Ricky's wearing and the various components it amplifies.
Think Greg Norman.
Think Greg Norman.
Now I'm on pontingwines.com.au as I speak, Sam.
As is your want.
As is I want. Now our listeners get 10% off if you use the code GETAFEW. On the price of a case of Ponting wines. We've had them. They're good. You've heard us talking about them before. They're very, very good. I'm just on the website. Quote here from Matthew Hayden, former Australian cricketer. You might remember him, friend of the show.
Oh, what does Hayden say? That might swing my decision.
I've already enjoyed a glass or two of the Pinnacle Shiraz, deep in colour, creamy in texture, and plenty of character straight off the bat, just like the founder himself. Ricky has always had the ability to build a quality team, and judging by his first vintage of premium wines, he's on the money once again. That's from Doss.
Oh, well, fuck. If Doss says it. No, he's a good stick. Langer's like the parrot on his shoulder. You reckon Ponting would be a good coach? Oh, fuck.
Pontingwines.com.au. Use the code GETAFEW for 10% off the price of a case. Here he is. Here's the great man, the prodigy, Will Bukowski.
Nights in Benya, my body
Well, here goes, listeners. What a pleasure it is to have with us, joining us here in the studio, who responded to a WhatsApp that's, I thought it was a long shot when I texted Will Pekowski and I said, straight out of the bubble, would you like to come over to the studio and have a chat with the great cricketer? I was expecting two blue bombers. Mm. He's played a test match now. Who the fuck are these blokes? Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, I'm on their I'm on his Instagram, and I was like, who the fuck are these? But no, he's a lovely, thoughtful, mature boy.
Well,
boy, rude.
Now a man.
And he's joined us in TGC Towers. Will Pekowski, our golden boy. Welcome to the great cricketer.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Mm. That was a very polite answer. Now, in this WhatsApp exchange, you actually replied by saying, love to do it, Pez. What should I wear? Yeah. And you're the only interviewee we've ever had who's asked what they should wear to a show. And you also went on to say, like, I've got one of 14 Ralph Lauren shirts that I could wear. So are you a fashionista?
I'll just say perception is everything, as we know through cricket. It doesn't matter how good you are, it's how you look. So, it was just a really dumb moment for me, to be honest. I had this idea because I'd seen you blokes had actually flourished a little bit and had got yourself a TV show. So the first thought that came to my mind was that TV show. So,
Are you disappointed to have learned just on the podcast?
Yeah, I'm in some podcast. So everyone's got a podcast these days. So I don't see why this is that special. But
Do you feel we've actually sissed off a little bit? Like I should have been clearer.
Yeah, well, I might have just given you the two blue bombs as you suggested before if I knew it was just this. But
Now, Pez did
I'll find myself here.
Pez did ask you to bring your baggy green to wear it. I presume you have brought it.
Yeah, I have, It's just in the car. If it wasn't raining, I would have brought it, but I didn't want it to get wet.
Do you like when internet blokes want to, like, devalue a great achievement, you know, by just trivialising your baggy green on some podcast?
Oh, well, that's the point of it, isn't it?
Good point.
It wouldn't be fun if everyone, you know... Mm. Was all respectful and all that stuff.
Yeah, true.
Now, you would know, Will, obviously, as an enormous fan of the show, that we've been saying...
Enormous is a bit strong, but...
I've been on the show. Yeah. Now, we've been saying for a while that you are prodigal runs. That is, the runs of a prodigy or prodigious talent. Now, we've had blokes with mothers that are linguistic experts apparently saying these blokes don't know what prodigal means and they're dumb. Mm. Can you just lean into the microphone and say, I am Will Pekowski and I am prodigal runs?
I am Will Pekowski and I am prodigal runs.
That's it. That's the interview.
Thinking about, like, you've debuted for Australia now in the Test arena, and, like, that things change for you when that happens. You've already, you know, tried to impress us by saying how many people knew you at Hotel Sorrento off air.
I don't recall.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that. Like, you know, for this kind of interview, like, are you relying on media training a little bit? Like, are you thinking, oh, what are they going to ask me here? What, you know, I've been taught to sort of, you know, pivot answers this way and that. Is that kind of how it works for you now that you're in big time media?
You do get trained that way. I was saying to you guys before that I was trying to explain to my missus, like, firstly why I was doing this instead of hanging out with her on a Friday morning, and couldn't come up with a good answer, but also, like, what the concept of the show was and stuff like that. So I basically said to her, the idea is that you guys try and make me sound like the biggest asshole that I can. So that's where, media training goes out the window, because you're meant to take them down a line of some crap, like cliche that's been going on for 100 years. But you guys make that quite tough at times. So I'll give it my best shot if you want me to, but.
So there's just
you can give us two answers. Like, give us, like, what you meant to say and then what you think.
There's just a club cricketer in all of us, though, isn't there? Like, you've just come out of the bubble, obviously, from playing test match cricket for Australia. You know, your girlfriend's like, can we just spend this lovely, rainy Melbourne Friday morning? No, I'm going to go on the Great Cricketer podcast. Mm. So you just can't escape it.
Yeah, you can't, can you? No. I wish I could, but...
Yeah.
It is amazing, though. I was at training this morning, and I'm not even saying this to take the piss, but how many blokes just... like, wish this was Saturday. Like, it is pissing down outside. Anyone who doesn't know, like, there's 35 mils of rain.
Scheduled,
I guess. Scheduled is the right word. Predicted for today. Mm. And, yeah, it's amazing how it doesn't matter what level you play at. They all wish it was on the day that cricket was meant to be on.
Like the best thing about cricket is when it's not playing.
Yeah,
like
when exactly, it's off. Yeah. You're actually always a better cricketer for not playing. That's where my shoulder injury is coming in handy. I think so. I'm better than I am.
Would you prefer to have the shoulder injury right now than play for Melbourne District Cricket Club tomorrow?
This will come out afterwards.
No.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And then what's the real answer? No. Well, it's funny you say, like, okay, so speaking about how grade cricket, parlays into playing for Australia, can you take us into the Australian sheds, you know? Like, is it a different environment to what you experience in grade cricket, or is it just like everyone's got better kit and there's more coaches?
I'd say it's the exact same. It's just, probably just, like, upgraded a little bit. So you've still got your alpha dog. So you've got Steve Smith. He's got the best bats. Everyone wants to copy him. He's the best player.
Yeah.
And then you sort of work. So he's allowed to do whatever he wants.
Right.
And then it sort of filters down from there. And like the younger and less experienced you are, the less you're allowed to do, the less you're allowed to get away with. You have the worst kit. You have the worst everything. So it does actually filter through. It's just probably, maybe ranked up a level or two. There's which I actually found surprising, to be honest.
Really?
I thought it would be a bit more of an even playing field in that regard. But it's like, Steve Smith's the best. He's got the most bats, sort of.
So how does that manifest? Like, it would be something that you'd want to do as part of your preparation or something, or say something, and then you'd think twice because you're like, I've got this intangible pyramid in my head of where I sit, and so if I say that, this will happen. You're still making those calculations?
100%. So it's also hard because...
Such a shame.
For the great cricketers, obviously, it's sort of similar. Like, you play for Victoria, you start off down the bottom, and you get sort of higher and higher up. And I still feel like I'm probably in that middle rung at the moment. Like,
really?
I'm still pretty young and inexperienced in Victoria. Then you jump the level and then you're right down the bottom again. So it's sort of just trying to navigate your way through. But if my shoulder were right and I was lucky enough to play grade cricket tomorrow, it would have been great going back to Melbourne knowing that I was probably closer to the top of the tree.
Yeah. Now, there's just, because we were learning the other day, weren't we, about, was it a sigma? Sigma male?
Yeah, so alpha.
So alpha is the top and then beta is the bottom, or omega is the bottom.
I think omega is the bottom.
But then sigma apparently is outside of the conventional structures of alphadom. You obviously know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Yes.
It goes without saying. But I reckon like Marnus is sort of outside this prism that you're speaking about, because he's relatively new into the side. I mean, he's got 5 test hundreds now. Don't get me wrong. Wonderful player. But I also noticed yesterday on Instagram, Dave Warner's referring to him as Hogpile on his Instagram. So is that what the players are calling him?
Whatever that word was, sigma or whatever, I mean, that describes him pretty well.
Just outside the sphere. Yeah.
Even when he's made 40 test hundreds, I think it'd still be the same as well.
That's
hard to. You have to probably have had alpha status somewhere in your life.
Yeah,
going up.
Yeah,
and I feel like he's just a lovely person.
Yeah,
and he's just never decided that being an alpha is for him.
Sure,
put it that way.
Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah,
it's not for me. This.
Yeah,
I refuse to be the alpha male.
Yeah,
just funny saying like you've got to have been an alpha somewhere in your life. Like researching this chat with you, I just noticed how many, like, there's so many interviews with you or stories about you ahead of your debut where, you know, the journo will do a recap of your cricketing life to date, lots of pictures of you as a kid, and
whether it's on TV or,
well, yeah, and I'm not going to go into Hampton and Brighton, I get it, you're a fucking worldie, but like, but like, kid scored runs, you know,
yeah.
He probably scored runs.
Kid does good, yeah.
Ponting nets, hit him. But like, there's lots of quotes about your maturity, you know, and your ability to mix it with older kids, like, because you're often in, you know, you're often in teams at a very young age. You're playing like senior cricket when you're like 10 or 11, scoring 50s. Like, so are you just used to going into every single team as the prodigy, you know? And so when you go into the Aussie team, are you sort of just sitting there going, listen, I'm just going to bide my time here because every team I go into, I'm just the guy who will make it?
That's a really tough one to answer. I feel like I can only answer this and sound like an asshole. But it was one of those. Yeah, I think growing up, you sort of get used to it.
Yeah.
I think the maturity thing is just a front more than anything. You just say one thing, but my mates would suggest otherwise. So it goes back to that.
What would your mates say?
That everything, what would they say? They do say that everything they see in the media is the complete opposite to who I actually am. So I guess I'm living my best life.
But it's, I mean, your mates would be right in it. It'd be a backhanded compliment because, like, when we, you know, we trawl through your Instagram and every Instagram before every interview, and the thing that stands out to me is, like, when you look at a lot of other cricketers, it's very curated. Is like pictures with particular people. It's often, you know, the icons of the sporting world trying to develop a kind of brand. You look at your one, everyone looks quite good, don't get me wrong, but like it's your mates, you know, it's your mates, it's your family, and like you've got comments underneath. It's all, it all seems very authentic and real. So it's obviously important to you to, you know, not be someone who just like eats cricket balls and lives and breathes cricket. Like you literally have a life outside the game, right?
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, you can get immersed in it a bit. So it's, important that you keep. A lot of people say genuinely that like people change when they move up the levels. Happens at well, it happens everywhere. It happens at grade level. You go. I still remember.
When I went up to twos. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Alistair McCook. So he won't. I hope he won't mind me saying this, but I remember. So he had this aura about him when I first went down to Melbourne as a 14-year-old, and I was like, this bloke has got to average 45 in the first. Like. Just got this presence, like he had the rig, he had everything. Like he sort of strutted around training. I was shocked to find out he was the fourth 11 captain, batted six and occasionally bowled. And I genuinely couldn't believe it. But I was like, oh well, at least he's living the best version of himself. He wants to be, yeah, have this aura. And he got me as a 14-year-old, and I thought, yeah, that's someone I want to latch onto. And then after I checked his stats, not so much, but. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think, yeah, a lot of people do maybe go down that sort of curated line, but I sort of, yeah, it's not really me, I wouldn't think.
Because it's interesting because Pez has obviously gone through Instagram. And I did the same thing, and you rightly say, Pez, that, you know, there's wonderful images there of your two dogs, Hugo and Harley. Is that right? Hugo and Harley, you know, friends and stuff. But your most recent photo is obviously you obviously Googled yourself in your debut because you've got a photo of yourself and it's just got the Getty Images watermark on it. So, yeah. So talk us through that process. Talk us through about Googling yourself.
Oh, well, yeah, it's got 60, so I thought. Mainly positive.
Job done.
Yeah. So I thought, yeah, I pretty much made it. I'm basically off Twitter. Like I'll barely ever read that.
Sounds intelligent.
Yes.
But I needed to get my fix of great cricketer stuff. So I have to keep Instagram. And I was shocked to find out that my followers had doubled on day one of my debut. So I was like, oh, well, I've got to make the most of this. So I just went, thought I'd put a photo up and get a few more likes than I was used to. So I was sort of, that's sort of big dick energies as well. If you get a lot of likes and stuff.
Can we skip straight to the debut if that's all right? Like when Pez and I think we're watching it together, weren't we? We were in my mind anyway. And it's just like the calm that you exuded in that first ball. It's just like you're playing a school game. Like your head must have been racing. You're facing Bumrah. Warner's obviously said, "No, mate, you take first ball."
All good. Yeah, kind of him.
And Bumrah's bowling from fucking cover, doing these ones with the wanger arm. Like what's going through your head when Bumrah's running in your test debut?
I actually genuinely felt like I was playing a PlayStation game, like because it was like International Cricket 2011 or something on PlayStation. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm trying to explain what it was like.
And not my PlayStation. Was it, mate?
They had this view, so like I still remember faking illness to get a day off school when the game came out. Yeah. So and I loved Shane Watson at the time. So it was whenever Shane Watson was opening the batting, and it might have been Ashes cricket. It was one of the games.
Yeah.
And they had this new view, and I thought it was pretty cool, where like you were like kind of a bit of a spider cam over the batter, so like you'd be almost facing.
Yeah.
And like I'd never played a proper game at the SCG before, so I didn't know what it was like.
Yeah.
But I had played a PlayStation game there. Getting Shane Watson 100 on Ashes cricket, whatever year it was, when I skipped the day of school, because I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember it vividly because mum and dad had a rule that if I was sick and couldn't go to school, I couldn't play on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
So I had like the thing, and unfortunately they were working really closely at the time, so they could come home and check on me during the day. So I remember Watson being on like 80-odd, I reckon, had to quickly save, like unplug the PlayStation and pretend I was doing something else. So I still remember it, and I was like, I genuinely remember sitting there. Bumrah was at the top of his mark, and I'm like, I know this because this is what happened.
R2X.
Yeah, this is what happened when I was facing England with Shane Watson.
Yeah.
And I think it was, what was the guy? Graham Onions bowled a lot to me that
Graham
day.
Graham Onions, Barbit straight to you that day.
Yeah, really punished him. trying to think. I forgot who else was bowling. Stephen Finn, maybe.
Yeah, Finney.
So that's what it genuinely felt like.
Felt like that.
Yeah, that was what my first over felt like.
Well, that's why it looked like it was so calm, because you were just playing PlayStation. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, so that was, that was actually it. I'm not even.
Yeah, that's fair enough. In terms of, like mountains of sports psychology and stuff, and it's just PlayStation.
Yeah.
It's, there was a story when Cameron Green kicked off his debut in the ODIs, and it was KL Rahul was like, "Go well, young fella." And Cameron Green's probably just like, "What? What sort of sledging is this? I don't understand."
Why being nice?
What is this sorcery?
What's this? Yeah. What is this sorcery? Was it the same for you? Like, how were you welcomed by the Indians? Was there any chat, any reminders or anything like that? Was it all very polite?
Not that I heard or cared for, really. They're actually quite nice, to be honest. Mm. And like, I can't take sledging seriously. Like, if they sledged me, it would have been like, "Cool guys, like, cheers, like, good on you," sort of thing. So it didn't really faze me. If anything, I would have. Yeah, I kind of like it, because if someone sledges you, like, I got sledged a bit in the Shield Games before Christmas.
Right.
I won't mention names, but like.
What are the nature of the sledges?
Who the fuck's sledging you when you're on 380 or whatever?
Like? Well, this was the thing. One of the sledges came from, this will make it pretty easy to work out, but it was the second game, and it was an opening bowler. Western Australia had sent us in. We were one for 230. I was on 130.
Mm.
And he started sledging me about, like, I sort of got lucky on a couple of shots. He started saying, "Oh, this is like a club game." And I was like, "What, mate? Like, you sent us in and it's one for 230. Like, what are you doing?"
Mm. One brings two.
And then I actually got, you know how like people, so I explained that to someone going off the ground. And you know when someone like says what your reply should have been, I'm like, that would have been. So they're like, "You should have just turned around to him and said, bloody oath, mate, like you're playing. Like,
a club game.
And at the time I was like, "Oh my God, that would have been so perfect."
Yeah.
But I didn't have that in me.
I don't think anyone's actually ever that quick to reply. We had someone run into a Patreon show yesterday about hashtag RCDC Fridays. And he said that he gave this like perfect, you know, perfect diction answer, eloquently presented in riposte. And it's like, there's no way that happens. If someone saw you a cunt on the field, you just like your head scramble, like, you don't never reply like with this perfect zinger.
Exactly. So. I wish, it's almost like you need to be prepared for it. Like, it needs to be, there needs to be a few overs, I reckon, of it. So you know, you're in your mind, you're already ticking over, like, what could he say next? This is what I'm going to say if he says something like this sort of thing. But if it's like a spontaneous thing.
Playing in a Shield game, 130. If he says this, I'm going to say this.
If it's like only a one-off thing, you sort of sit there and you're like, "Oh, it's pretty hard to."
Yeah. Well, I think you probably won that battle.
Mm. I don't think so. I could have come back with something.
He won it.
I should have come back. Yeah, I should have. I just have this belief. Like, I got, and I hate Dad for teaching me this, but he's like, as a batsman, you can't win if you sledge back.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you're 130 not out after making 250 the game before, you can win. Like, even if you get out next ball, you've still won.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he should have maybe made that a bit more clear, saying like, if you have made a significant amount of runs previous to that, you can say whatever you want.
He should have made that more clear. You're right. Yeah.
So that's his fault.
Just a quick one on, because we didn't want to, you know, focus on your head for this interview, because I feel like you've said a lot, you've given people a lot, you know, around what's happening with your head and what you've gone through. And if people want to hear what you think or what others think, there's so much out there, you know, so you don't need another interview on that. All I want to know is, like, I just my observation that, like, fuck, 26 million people have views on your head, you know? At, like, what does that feel like just with so many people thinking that they can I don't know, everyone's allowed to express what they want to express, but like just carrying that idea that so many people have views on a quite a highly complex thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of experts out there.
Yeah.
Well, I would say I did well in the test because I've grown this beautiful mullet. The attention's gone from what's inside my head to outside now.
Genius.
So, that's sort of been a method behind that.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting one. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is bizarre because everyone seems to have a view and like, "Oh, he can never play again. He's been hit this amount of times." It's like, "Oh, you're a brain surgeon, are you, mate? Like, good work." Like,
good work.
Mm. Yeah.
That's just Twitter.
Yeah. Legit, that's why I got rid of it. But I think people, I would say they're entitled to their opinions, but I actually don't agree with that because I'm like, I don't sit there or – not me and no one. This is the thing about professional sport. I can people think because they pay money to go and watch or they watch on the TV, they have the right to just abuse you.
Yeah.
But I don't pay $5 to go abuse you for not doing your job properly or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's an interesting one because I was saying to you blokes before, I actually had the privilege of watching the first two tests with my mates and like listening to how judgmental they are about people, like, and I just sit there and I go like, I actually spray them when it's not about me at all, just saying like, oh, if it's that easy facing blokes at 140 kilometres an hour swinging it both ways, then go on, it's all yours, like have a crack.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very easy to judge, but no one really knows what's going on, I don't think. And as long as you, it's getting a bit serious for my liking. But
okay,
as long as as long as people, like, as long as you, the people around you, I guess, that you care about, understand and know what's going on, then I think that's all that matters. It's a lot easier said than done. That's probably the main thing. And like other outside noise is pretty much irrelevant.
Mm.
That's very wise for a man beyond his years. I had a message from a guy. I think the ball was still in the air when Warner nicked off at the Gabba. Hadn't ever been caught yet. Bloke was on the WhatsApp. Warner's nicked off again. Fucking hell. How many hundreds does this guy need? Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, I mean, you sort of answered the question there, but Pete, we spoke to Pete Hanscom last week, who said that he doesn't read any press anymore, and you just sort of spoke about social media. I just wonder how you deal with that, you know, in your future inevitable successes, because like basically anytime we do a good podcast, I'm online reading the reviews. Don't worry about that. Any YouTube comment, you know, like it might be easier to wipe out the negative criticism because you're just like, if I've done something, you know, if I'm performed that well, don't even want to look at it. But if you score a test 100, you might want to have a little look online maybe and just, you know.
Yeah, a little gander.
Yeah, well, that's a tough bit. I reckon you got to pick one or the other. You've either got to go, I'm tough enough to accept both, I'm not going to take either.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like,
yeah.
At the end of the other thing is, which, so why do you need to read random people's comments? Because you get 300 text messages from people that actually know you. So it's you get enough sort of ego boost out of that you don't need
more
Twitter and that to go, oh, your front, like, yeah, you got some runs, but your front foot was a bit too far across.
Well, that was actually my next question.
Just out of interest, did Pete wear a hat when he did the interview?
No, he didn't.
For people watching the Big Bash, obviously he's got his mullet going.
Yeah.
And I think it might be the last mullet he ever has.
And that's not that why. I want
to the swan song.
Yeah, I think so. I might have given him the big reveal there, but I know he's like, it's looking like luscious at the moment out the back of the hat, but I'm not sure it's as safe and secure as.
And that may be why he's growing it. It's a compensation.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, just for the viewer that might be thinking, gee, Pete's really like going well.
Yeah,
in that area, it's again sort of similar to social media. It's not all that it seems.
Well, you've obviously ascended to a particular position in the Victorian team where you can make that comment publicly to the captain.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. But you wouldn't do that in the Australian team.
Fine leg to fine leg without a shoulder.
That's how.
Hey, what's the what's your like recognition levels right after playing one test match? Has it gone through the roof? You sort of walk around the street, stopped in the street now.
It's honestly way too high considering I've only played one game.
Yeah. But you've been around, haven't you? You've been around squad since 2019?
Mm.
Yeah.
When was your first squad? Sri Lanka one?
Yeah, 2019. Yep. So it's, yeah. I think I've done really well at building up a ridiculous story for considering I've only just played my first game. So I feel like...
yeah.
You've done really well.
Yeah, so just like that whole thing of when you're not playing, you're actually better than when you're playing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So people have sort of built up this thing that, you know, I'm really good, but no one's ever actually seen me play or do anything.
Oh, so the myth of Pekowski.
Yeah. So one of my mates actually said after my first innings, he texted me, he's like, mate, you may as well hang him up now. You're never going to be better than that right now. It doesn't matter what you're doing. I'm like,
that's a fair point.
So that's one of your 300 texts.
Yeah.
Hang him up now.
I didn't reply to 299, but that was the one I did reply to.
I wonder if you want to get into, if you'd hang around with us to take a few Ask TGC questions as well, now that you're here.
Well, I was going to ask Pez, I mean, Sri Lanka's obviously Sri Lanka. South Africa's sort of around the corner.
Around
the corner. He must be pretty excited to face Rabada and Nokia on those seeming green decks. So it's a really exciting prospect.
Yes, I am there. Yeah. Funny enough, I actually am.
Yeah.
Mm. I actually am. Funny because we were talking about the media thing before. I got a text from another one of my very supportive mates saying that... you know, like, Australia might bat Will at five in South Africa to protect him from, it was actually, I must have been written this morning because he texted me this morning, bat at five to be protected from, you know, their fiery attack and stuff. And I was like, are they like not allowed to bowl really well if I bat at five? Yeah. I was like, that's the most ball. Like, what's the point of this article?
I kept reading that the way through the India series as well. It's just like they bowl at number five and six as well.
And I was
and
like,
sometimes second new ball.
I was quite amazed. And then like even all the stuff about he's gonna get a short pitch barrage. I'm like, what do you think I get every time I play a game for Victoria? Like, just bounce the bejesus out of me. But it's like almost as if there's this mythical thing where in first class cricket, they just underarm half volleys to me, and then you go to the next level, and all of a sudden, all these blokes are just bouncing everyone. I'm like, what? Like, why does it matter? Like, it's like, he's so protected at five. It's like, nah, it's still a test match. Like,
I mean, I did see your 200 against South Australia. There were a couple of throwdowns there.
No comment.
I did score a few. Are you an opener now? Is that the deal, or is this you're an opener for now?
Well, I don't know. Apparently, I'm getting moved down to five to be
precise. Okay,
I've got no idea. Yeah. I think it was funny how you're not an opener. You open literally twice.
Yeah,
you're an opener. Yeah, now. It's like, I couldn't tell you. I guess I'm probably down that pyramid, so I bat where I'm told still. So I've got to move up before I decide where I bat. Mm. But I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
it seems anyway externally that you've sort of been taken under the wing of Tim Payne's, obviously some famous games of FIFA being played, some Twitter battles back in the day when you were on Twitter. I mean, Payne's obviously, he's obviously been criticised pretty heavily after this test series, but I'd imagine anyway, well, it seems like the team fucking love him. I'd imagine you'd be no different.
Yeah, I do love him.
Yeah,
I was trying to think of something smart.
to show your love as an Australian male.
Yeah. He's still shit at FIFA.
Yeah. I was getting, when everyone was carrying on in the media about like Payne should be sacked on the back of like calling one bloke a dickhead, like as if that's the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. I was jumping on the bandwagon and getting stuck into him saying, I agree, mate, you should be sacked the last test.
Careful how that might be quoted.
Yeah. it did come from a place of love. It was, as I said, but we'll see how he goes. If he calls someone something mean in South Africa, might get bullied into submission again. But no, he's an absolute ripper. He's been awesome to me. He plays FIFA against me, which entertains me because I beat him all the time. So he tries to claim it's for my confidence, like sort of as that he's sort of top of the pyramid because he's captain.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm bottom of the pyramid, so to sort of get that confidence built up.
Yeah, you're an academy player kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got to earn the right.
But can I ask just on that, he goes, you obviously got an interest in the media and in football. It was uncovered that you, in 2016, had been writing a few articles for The Roar about Manchester United.
Yeah.
So was that the commencement of a budding career in journalism? I've read the pieces. They're quite good. And I'd share your views about Adnan Januzaj. Are you still as into United now as you were then? And if so, what's your assessment?
Yeah, so I am still just as into it as I was then. At the time, I was actually doing a uni degree and I thought I wanted to be a journalist coming out of school. I went to my first class and thought, I do not want to do this. So that shows that school's a waste of time.
What was it? Was it about destroying people's lives that made you want to stop?
Yeah, that made me uncomfortable. Actually, the first thing our teacher or whatever you call it, uni person, what are they called?
Lecturer?
Tutor. Lecturer, yeah, something like that. She goes, I want you to go find someone like well-known that you know and like just get a bit of information out of them. I'm like, I don't feel comfortable doing that. Like, I don't want to go and message someone. I was like, hang on a minute, this is what journalism actually is. And I went, yeah, you know what? I'm going to focus on my cricket. but yeah, so I did sort of them as part of doing my journalism thing. And I'm a passionate Man United fan. So when I woke up yesterday to notice that we'd been knocked off by a team that had won one game in 19, I was quite pissed off at home.
Yeah,
but I do love my soccer. If I could, more interesting than cricket.
If I could ask the dynamic of you and Tim Payne, sorry to interject the Manchester United chat as a Liverpool fan.
He's also a Manchester United fan.
Is he? Now, I understand that when you got one of your 200s in the Shield this season, funny sentence, that Payne like drove past you and was just like, get a few runs today, did you?
Mm.
Is that true?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, what's that dynamic going on there? He's just trying to keep me in the place.
Because he knows exactly how many you've scored.
I think he's jealous. There you go.
Yeah.
He's jealous. Yeah. Nah, he just, he's like, I love him, but he's a knob, so.
Apparently, that like listeners to the show would be aware of this. Like, apparently that's what Ponting used to do to bring people down, like he'd be in the change room, someone might have hit 40 or 50 for Tassie, let's say in the mid-90s or something, and he was a young buck coming through. He's like, oh, get a few today, did you?
Mm.
And obviously Tim Payne's picked up on that. Yeah, he's intoned that. He knows exactly how many you've scored, but when he says get a few, did you, what he's really saying is like, I'm not quite sure, I heard you might have scored some runs. Can you confirm that for me?
Yeah, it's almost like I'm focused on the test series, so Shield Cricket's below me, but apparently.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, so it's actually quite a detailed, like people think it's just a throwaway comment, but there's actually a lot
but effort that comes. Underneath that is him recognising in his own way that you have scored runs as well. So he is congratulating you, but on the top of that is also a bit of a sledge and he's not really that into it. Very complicated man dynamics. Exactly,
So people think, it's so simple, but it's really not.
No, you got to read into
it. I just got one more, probably the most important one on my list of questions here. How tall is Cameron Green?
Very tall.
Yeah.
I think.
Is he thick as well? Like,
Yeah. Like you look at him and you go, if I was an AFL recruiter, I would bore my eyes out that we didn't get him because he's so athletic as well.
Yeah.
And you just look at him and you're like, oh my God, like you are a specimen.
But more importantly, what's he like as a bloke? Because we haven't really heard him speak much.
Mm. He's a lovely person. Yeah. Like very quietly or softly spoken.
A bit too straight though. Might be some secrets there, some skeletons.
I think because I'm young, so we obviously got along really well because we're both like the young bucks, I guess, in the team.
Yeah.
I probably got a bit more out of him, so I know there's probably like a dark side there. Yeah, a couple of level. Okay. Yeah, but I don't want to be the one to...
Nah.
Yeah. So like Pete, I'm happy to throw under the bus, but Cam, I just want to let him...
Yeah. So when it comes out, he's involved in like QAnon or something, then conspiracy theories, that kind of gear.
Cult stuff,
I'm not going to reveal anything.
For your own safety.
Let Cam come out.
Got it.
Pete's more a stick, whereas Cam's, as I said, 200 centimetres thick.
Yeah. Athletic. Yeah.
Is he going to bowl 155 k's an hour when he's able to run into the crease?
It is unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if I try so hard to bowl quick and we do have the radar gun at Victoria, like, if I break 100, it's amazing. And he, like, does not try and it's like 142 and you're like,
it's just the mass of it.
It's just the mass of it.
Yeah.
He could honestly, like, he's the type of player, like, a sports person, where even in the modern era, he could probably go kick 60 goals for West Coast in the off season and then come back and average 50 with the bat and 20 with the ball.
Yeah, right.
One of those. Like, he's just one of those people. Like, he wouldn't have to train or anything. He'd just roll in and.
Yeah.
Well, no, we're just talking about him and his rig and stuff and rig worship and male dynamics. Like, when he comes into the Australian setup, and there are so many kind of like, you know, Space Jam monster type rigs in the Aussie side, especially with the quicks. Mm. Do they admire him? Like, where does he come into the rig pyramid? Are they like, mate, have a go at you. Have a go at him.
Look at you.
Is it like that or is it still, you're young, we're not going to acknowledge you?
Mm. I'd like to see what it's like in the one day side where Big Puppy Stoinis is in town because that's a proper rig.
Yeah.
I think the fast bowlers are a bit softer, like they're kind of really like welcoming, so they kind of are nice to him and sort of go, yeah, like you're a big boy, you're part of us.
Yeah,
but like I reckon, like Big Puppy might, and like they're both
because they're not allowed to bench the quicks, though, are they? Which is important from a rig perspective. They don't like Cummins and stuff like that. They don't let us bench. That hurts from a rig point of view.
Among
equals. Yeah.
So that's unlucky for them as a batter. You're allowed to do whatever you want. Yeah. So, yeah, that's where, I don't know, it'd be an interesting one. Because he's an all-rounder as well. Like, does he fall into, like, a Mitch Marsh, Marcus Stoinis category of, like, comparison? Because they're also big boys as well.
So they're just massive. Western Australia, there's something in the water over there.
Yeah. I feel like the quicks are more like your lean, like, you know, we've got a bowl, 25 overs in a test, whereas, like, as an all-rounder, you can get away with a bit more work in the gym because you're like,
that's right.
Pull out 8 to 12.
Yeah.
Complicated.
Yeah, opening bowls more like your sort of runway models, catwalk, thin, lean, whereas like the all-rounders more Instagram fitness models.
Mm. Yeah.
Look good on camera.
Yeah.
He's got so many things to consider, Cam Green, doesn't he?
He's got a lot
to
consider,
so many weapons at his disposal. How does he carry it all at once and average 50 and bowl at 20?
Yeah. He just wants to row at the regatta and work at his dad's law firm.
That's right. Kick 60.
That's become irrelevant at some stage, though. Like it's the presence and stuff that he offers, I'd say. Yeah. Like everyone knows he's good now, so it's like,
and he's in the gully. It triggers memories of Hayden just being fucking broad.
Big mitts, just fucking
taking some catches, throwing them up, swallowing catches. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stats matter though, you know. I mean, Marnus carries on. But does he stay in the side if he averages 30? You know what I mean? Like there's a certain amount of runs you have to score.
He's done enough.
Yeah, he's done enough. Yeah.
For five years.
Leave that alone. Will, we're going to keep you for RCGC, but we had more important questions to ask you. You've got to go get to breakfast now with your mate. You said from the junction, it's probably a Vic player or something. But so thank you so much for joining us in TGC Towers.
Thanks
for
having me, guys. I am Will Pekowski.
Prodigal run. Prodigy. Prodigy, prodigy, prodigy. Prodigal runs.
Prodigy.
Prodigal runs.
Prodigy.
Prodigal runs.
Prodigy.
Prodigal runs.
Prodigy. Prodigy.
I am Will Pekowski and I am Prodigal Run.
Hey, everyone.
Fucking hell, you've been speaking to them for 4 years for this medium. Hey, everyone.
Hey, everyone.
Fuck, that got me.
Get around our great friends at Budgie Smuggler, okay? Yep. You already know the website, budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Yep.
You know, there's a bit of change and upheaval in Australian cricket. Well, there may be.
Mm-hmm.
But one group, one organisation that has stuck solid with TGC the entire time, that is deeply responsible for our continued production of content, is Budgie Smuggler. Could not be prouder to be associated with this company that is produces Australian-made swimwear, produced at home in Australia, Australian-owned company as well.
Pez, I from time to time we get messages from people who have met the owner of Budgie, yes, or people that have worked or they're wearing their Budgies or whatever. We got a DM this week from I'll just say his name, Matt Taylor. He sent a picture of him wearing a Budgie Smuggler face mask.
Yeah,
it's a pink one with pineapples on it. You might have seen it before. It said, Budgie Smuggler has kept me COVID free in Trump era USA, yeah, no mean feat, and keeps my face warm on the slopes over here. Free shipping and arrived in 2 days. So he's obviously used the code, nice, CHAMP for free shipping. Arrived in 2 days into the US. He's on the slope somewhere in the US, I'm guessing. And he's got his face mask on, which helps him during the snow season. So win-win.
It doesn't just stop at face
masks. Nice to hear from the fans.
Or actual smugglers themselves. There's T-shirts. There's fucking paraphernalia.
There's paraphernalia
everywhere.
Coming out your ears.
Coming out of your ears. And they actually have a product that does that. Just look it up. You can design your own shit to go on it. You can take some of their designs.
Mm.
Fuck, it's design on demand. It's content on demand, but for merchandise, I guess.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. So you can get all that and free shipping using the word CHAMP, the code CHAMP, at checkout at budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Hashtag RCDC, Pezzy lad.
Here we go.
This one comes in from Jake.
Season.
I was reminiscing with a mate last weekend about our junior cricket days from 2005 and the following story came up which I thought I'd share. For context, in WA junior cricket, good stuff, school/district gear, is played on Sundays and yuck stuff, miscellaneous, anyone can play AstroTurf gear, is played on Sundays. If you played both, Saturdays were anxiety-inducing cauldrons of despair and...
Ennui.
Now, what is ennui?
Ennui is when you feel like nothing matters, everything has stopped, I'm not moving forward in any way.
Excellent, Jake. Ennui. While Sundays were, at least theoretically, for fun. Fuck out of here with your fun. That's Jake said that, not me. In my final season of playing the yuck stuff, and despite being a quick who batted 8-odd, 10, in the good stuff, I did pretty well with the bat and ended up winning the batting award for my district. While I, of course, rocked up to the ceremony, collected the award, thanked the sponsors, etc., I can say with absolute certainty that I did not deserve to win that award. That is because the award was given to the person with the highest batting average for the season. I got out once all season due to compulsory retirement at 50, meaning my average was a stupid 250-odd, 223.16. The mug who came second only averaged 100-odd. However, he did score an unbeaten 200 in one game. This meant that he was forced to retire at 50, then come back in to pile another 150. Get a few today, did you? Having played a lot of junior cricket against this bloke, we knew he was decent and a fuckwit, but not fucking 200 not out decent. That said, when we came up against him the week after, he'd callously inflicted mental scars on an unsuspecting group of short-wearing types. Short-wearing types. We were a bit worried that he'd still be seeing him pretty well. Our coach and umpire was worried too. When the fuckwit came out to bat, he had four balls to negotiate against our grenade-wielding off-spinner who had a deadly arm ball. He turned the odd one. His first ball pitched short and was angling down leg and hit the fuckwit nearer to his thigh pad than his knee roll. We went up because, fuck it, why not? I don't think our boy had finished his follow-through before our coach slash umpire had triggered the fucker with barely suppressed glee. It remains the most blatantly brilliant display of biased umpiring I've ever seen. The fact that this outrageous cheating also contributed to the Mudd not winning the batting award that he unquestionably deserved makes it all the more hilarious. Venkat aside, what are some of the best triggers you've witnessed? Keep up your top work, Jake.
I don't know, man. I mean, Jake seems like a good bloke and wonderful use of dramatic adjectives all through this. But the story just seems to be that, like, he won a batting award.
And here's some colour around it.
And here's a bloke who's a fuckwit who didn't win it, but he was good. And so, therefore, you know, maybe I'm kind of good.
Because he's not saying that that dismissal cost him the batting award necessarily.
just throwing that in. It's sort of like, here's a story where I come off looking pretty good.
Yeah.
What are the best triggers you've witnessed?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Finished it and then he sat in the last cell. His cursor was just blinking at him for about 3 days. I was like,
what's the question?
Yeah.
I don't know. I more remember the ones where, like, that weren't given, you know. Like I was telling you one yesterday about, like, playing under 12s or 13s. Ended up becoming really good mates with this kid in adulthood, but he was batting and his dad was umpiring and it was a classic Greg Davidson, like, finger went up and then scratched the nose. I've never forgotten that. And then...
You were telling me that.
I was telling you that, yeah.
You didn't tell the audience that.
I meant to say I was telling you this the other day, and now I'm telling the audience we're on air.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are we?
And then what was the other one? Well, again, I know for a few times, but state players never given out in first grade. They're just simply not given out.
Yeah.
And Phil Jaggs hit 320 against us, and he was just fucking plum early.
Oh,
just
really?
Big star. Oh, yeah, big time. But that makes it funnier. I understand that. I'm told rationally that I meant to say that. The psychologist says, say that and you'll sound normal.
You are indoctrinated.
Mm.
I don't remember any, like, great trigger moments. I remember times when, like, I got an apology walking off the field. The team apologized for appealing.
Oh.
They didn't withdraw the appeal, don't get me wrong.
Did that make you feel better a little bit, though?
A little bit, yeah.
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 I mean, they apologized.
Yeah. Oh, so everyone knew. Actually, that happened to me twice.
Oh.
Happened to me twice. Actually, no, the second time I got an apology from the umpire at the end of the day's play, and he was like, which one of you guys did I give out, caught down the leg side, hit my thigh pad? And I was like, oh, yeah, I wish I had that one back. And then, like, I don't think I even said anything. But then people, that seemed to split the dressing room. I was fucking chuffed with that because I was going through this rough trot of fucking.
Relationships.
I could not, that aside, and so Saturday was my break. Saturday was my break from the tough relationships that I was going through.
What was happening in a relationship?
I couldn't get it up. The average, that is. And that sort of split the dressing room between half were like, oh, but that makes you feel pretty good. Don't get me wrong, it did. Because I couldn't fucking buy a run. I was getting all these bad decisions in the same year. And then the other half of the room was like, that's fucking shit. I'd fucking hate to be told that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't do anything about it now.
I told you I didn't hit it.
Yeah. Cricket is a fucking brand game. It's PR. It's narrative. Yeah. Like,
it's spin.
When you get out, that's only half the issue. The other issue is how you start spinning the dismissal when you're out.
Can you think of another game that makes you lie as much as cricket?
No.
Are you happy? No.
Is that a lie? Is that?
No way. You say yes. I'm so confused. Let's just take one more, Pez.
All right. Anon. Oh, okay. Yeah. Anon writes in. Boys. Brackets. Please read in a dejected tone, not the Julian-esque bravado we are used to.
Boys.
Boys. Boys. I've relapsed. Fuck. What have I done? I played cricket for about 10 years, eight, and always enjoyed the game because my home club in Tassie was full of schoolmates and had produced some decent cricketers. Brackets. George Bailey and the moonwalking Sean Young. Reference Tim Payne's story of playing first grade as a 15-year-old. I joined the military and played some country stuff so I could stay match fit and represent the military in home and away tours. Definitely a good around the boys selection, but not big enough to fail. I have since had a shoulder reconstruction, left the military, and left my cricket behind me. Now just an avid watcher and side mouther who talks about the time he took a couple of poles bowling offies at Gaddafi Stadium in Lahore against the reigning under 19 World Cup champion Pakistan side. Brackets, just dot them up and bowl at the base of leg stump. I recently moved house and my kit moved with me, and I thought I could give it a crack for a couple of games. Have a train and laugh. Heroin might have been a better alternative. I still can't bat. My fingers are stained red. My shoulder is sore and my back hurts only on one side. And yeah, this is authentic. And I also won't forget the look in the eye of the fourth grade opening bowler, inverted commas, when referring to the sole female player, inverted commas, I wouldn't mind giving her a Yorker if you know what I mean. Brackets, I didn't know what he meant. Anyway, I've re-retired and I hope you can forgive my relapse. Yours in parentheses, a non.
Okay, first things to note here, no question. Just a short story. Just a short story, but it's authentic and I like it. And here's what resonated with me the most, Pez. Now, in the first book, we developed a term called August hands, which is the thing where you go into pre-season training, it's cold as fuck on a Thursday night when you're going for your first training. You're catching those white balls or the red kookaburras or whatever, and they sting your hands like fuck. The second thing that hurts the most, apart from that, is when you throw the ball, you do some fielding drills the first time in 6 months, or you go for a bowl down the nets, and the fucking pain in like your scapula and one side of your back is fucking excruciating. Next day. Yeah. That day, the day after,
yeah.
Real painful. So I like the authenticity from A.non. Yeah.
Did you get any other soreness like from playing at all?
Bit of heartburn.
Emotional.
Angina.
Yeah.
As you tweeted the other day.
I often found if I hadn't batted for a while, like my hands would be sore the next day because I probably, all through there. Yeah.
As, forearm, yeah.
Or the top of my forearm trying to grip with top hand.
Yeah.
But even my hands, like probably from holding the bat too hard for
just
anxiety.
Just in like the webbing part.
Yeah, webbing part. Exactly. Bit, right in the webbing. I can feel that now.
Yeah.
And then bowling leg spin, my finger would split. Like the spinning finger would always break, and the skin would come off. It would be quite torturous actually. Mm. And then you'd have like, I remember when I was younger, like old grade players would be like, "Oh, the way you harden up that spinning finger is by pissing on it." But like you'd always go to preseason training, and if you haven't bowled for a few months, you'd like rip the leggy. Yeah, I'll get there.
Fucking jellyfish burn.
Yeah, no, you rip the leggy. And then after like a maybe 5-6 overs, the skin would start peeling. Oh, not peeling, like it would kind of slide off, and like you'd have red raw basically skin there that you couldn't bowl with anymore. Yeah. So that was it. And then like you'd have to develop the callus over a few weeks. Just normal stuff.
Yeah.
My old spin coach Dave Friedman, first class cricket, 8 for 38 against West Indies once.
Yeah,
he's left arm wrist spinner. And he developed a callus to the point where, like, his finger had a huge, bump coming off it. He had to get his wedding ring refit.
Oh, that's right. You told me that,
To get over his finger. So just, like, little stuff like that. But, yeah, like, he didn't say he pissed on his finger. Yeah. You could get stuff from the chemist, though, like this green stuff to actually harden up your skin.
Urine.
And no, it was this green stuff. It was like, radioactively green-coloured. And it would also grip. It would also create grip on your finger.
Right, that's illegal.
Yeah.
So you were cheating?
I don't know. I was just doing what the older guys said to do.
Another one when I was keeping back in the day, a couple of first sessions, you come back from like pre-season, you get hot spots on like the
palm. Yeah.
And they fucking sting.
Yeah.
That's different to August hands where like it just, you get like that like the slapping on the finger. Yeah.
And would you find that would hurt your bone as well? I'd get very bone.
Yeah, it's just a bruise, but you call them hot spots, make it sound a little bit more.
Yeah, I've got hot spots.
Oh, you're catching balls, are you?
Yeah, you're basically bruising your hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cricket's a good game.
It's a good game.
Cricket's a good game. Hey, there's fucking cricket happening all over the world at the moment. Jesus Christ. Hope you are safe wherever you are in the world, especially in Perth, our dear friends, because there's one case here at the moment, so get well soon.
Are we going to keep going into negotiations around our coverage of England-India? We'll make those. Maybe there'll be something to say about that a little bit later. But there's discussions about how that might be reflected upon by TGC.
We're having another business meeting on air, aren't we?
Yeah, once again, we're doing it again.
Hashtag Ask TGC Fridays. Episode 26 comes out on patreon.com/greycricketer. We'll see those of you on Friday.
Bradman v. Benno.
And we'll see the rest of you next week.